This is the MLW Radio Network.
Welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling. You're on the MLW Radio Network, as well as on cagematch.net. It's G1 season, Dylan. I'm your host, Trigger. Hi.
G1 Climax Grade 1. Not Grade 2, not G2. They did that one year.
Like, they did.
Yeah, but that's something nobody remembers, I'm sure, outside of us and maybe a handful of blessed listeners to this show. But G1, big season, big shows, big things to talk about. Every match of the tournament counts towards your final score in this tournament. And not just G1, all kinds of stuff coming up as well. Well, just G1 right now, but you know, you got 5-star Grand Prix coming up in a week. I just recorded a show with Sandre yesterday, previewing every single match of
every
the tournament.
Every single match, yes. You love saying that, don't you?
Not only do I love saying it on Stardom, but I do love saying every single match that I previewed on the G1 as well. All on the Patreon, you got to sign up, tell your friends, go to patreon.com/EasternLariat. You get the predictions, you get the full previews, you see what I thought, who I predicted, all of the points. Did I get some right? Did I get some wrong? Well, we're going to talk about some of that today. So either way, hopefully everybody is having a good day, good night, whenever you're listening. Just know that I appreciate you listening. Hopefully we all have some fun today.
Absolutely, yes. So our G1 coverage usually doesn't consist of just going through match by match. We usually take two or three shows at a time and then look at the grand scheme of things, like how the performers are doing, what stories you can grasp during the tournament, and some individual thoughts on some matches, of course. I want to say, Dylan, you said pick'ems on our straight wrestling pick'ems. I correctly predicted the Shota Umino versus Ren Narita time limit draw, but otherwise it doesn't look as good. I think I predicted about half the matches right at this point, so I'm still getting into groove, and we'll see how that unfolds throughout the tournament. Yeah, let's just tackle these two shows from Hokkaido, from the Hokkaido Prefectural Sports Center, Hokkai Kitayel. I love saying that too, Kitayel. You know, that's a great name for a building. They did a good house there. They announced a crowd of 3,145 for the first day. That was up from 2,891 at last year's opening of the tournament. Today's show did a little bit less than that, less than 3,000, 2,888 they announced for the main event of Jeff Cobb and Tetsuya Naito. Is there any takeaways from that, Dylan? Do you think that, like, the opening day is stronger than the second day? Is there any match that you would point to that was stronger on the first day, or what are your thoughts on this draw?
To me, I think it's interesting that the first show did as well as it did with Hikuleo in the main event. Yeah. I would say I think that's the shows you the true strength of the first day over anything, even with Tetsuya Naito in the second day's main event. The first day still did better, and I think that goes to show the first day is that sweet spot. And a lot of these tournaments, I think now, another thing, and I think if they continue the format they have now with the four blocks, I actually think in years to come, this sort of problem I'm about to get to will be a little bit better. But I think the problem is, for so many years, it was a two-block system.
Yeah.
And that meant that all of their matches got exposed, pretty much. Like, you know, you couldn't dodge somebody for years and years forever. You know, eventually you're going to have a singles match, right, even if you're a big star with another star. And those matches got watered down a little bit. I mean, we've seen, you know, your Naito's and Tanahashi's a million times, pretty much, to where it doesn't mean as much as it once did. But I think now what that's caused with a lot of fans is they will scout. Like, the fans are smart to the tournament and wise to which ones, which shows are really important and which one has the best vibe to it. And I think you'll see, you know, no doubt the last few shows. And again, hopefully that it can lead to big things, because now the last show for each block is like, you know, four different shows. Like, you know, the last four shows of the tournament are all big. And that. So I think if things work out and play out in years to come, you'll see things be more interesting, you'll see matches more protected. But for right now, I think the fans are wise to the big show. So the first night, that shows you that was a nothing main event, but the fans still showed out for it more than even a Naito and Cobb, which is a match between their most popular star and a premium foreign talent.
And they not only had that, they also had Zack Sabre Jr. versus Tanahashi on that show, as well as Eddie Kingston's first performance. So yeah, it's kind of surprising, to be quite honest, that this show did so much less than the first show. But that's how it goes.
All of those matches, too, Japanese versus foreigner. You know, you could say Evil and Tonga, another foreigner talent type of deal.
Yep.
Finlay and Ishii. A lot of that show was based off of foreigner versus Japanese talent, and it didn't really. Like I said, I really think the day, if they had switched the shows, I think the first day would have done better. If they had switched the cards overall. I don't really read too much into it other than that, more than anything. Like, I'm not going to proclaim Hikuleo as some big draw in Japan now.
No, probably not. No. From these two shows, Dylan, what were your top matches?
Well, first of all, I think, to me, the second show was a lot better than the first
Absolutely.
One. Absolutely. You know, night one, they may have had more fans for it, but I think that, unfortunately, it really wasn't the hot start.
That's crazy, right? Because they gave these two shows out for free, and you'd really expect them to, like, get the team together and say, okay, we have to get a great show today to impress all the viewers, maybe first-time viewers of the G1 Climax that might stick with the tournament. But except for a few matches, like half of the matches were pretty crappy and didn't do anything for their cause, I would say. So I don't know if that was the best advertisement, to be quite honest.
I will have to agree with you on that one. I think that, again, I feel like if you have any sense, you know what a Sonata and Hikuleo match is going to give you in the main event. That really set the tone for me for what they even expected. And unfortunately, it felt like a lot of the matches followed suit, you know, even the ones that had potential, you know, it had upside. I mean, right away, you know, Yoshihashi and Fantasmo, a fine match, but did not, you know, electrify anyone. I don't think, like, a fine opening type of match, but not and you would think that they would have a better one in them, you know, like Fantasma would be super motivated, Yoshihashi tag team champion, but I don't want to rip on it, but it wasn't as great as you would want. And then you had the Gabriel Kidd and Chase Owens deal, which was kind of like a lot of brawling, and then they kind of went to a quick match, and then, you know, Kenta and Tangaloa, which
by that point of the show, we had seen all the tropes of the tournament. And after that, we got a time limit draw. So except for a double count on and double DQ and stuff like that, we've seen a ref bump. We've seen chairs used. We've seen belts used. We've had a crowd brawl. And, Kenta brought all of his shticks out. So everything that you can do in their G1 Climax was done in the first three matches of the show. And this is not a positive.
Oh, I definitely agree with that. And I do think it's interesting how they laid out this first show in general. I got every match right on the first show except for the opener and Okada and Okan. I thought they might give Okan something, but not to be. And I did think Phantasmo may beat Yoshihashi to start. But the other ones all made sense. Like I said, the draw was very easy to see coming, in my opinion. It makes perfect sense considering how they built that up. And, I mean, I thought that was one of the better matches on the first show.
I was just going to say, back to the question. We were rambling around about what was not so good, but what did you think was good? I think it's universally agreed that the Shota Umino versus Gran Narita match was one of best matches of these two shows. What else do we have here?
Yeah, I thought Kaito and Tsuji, like, that was the battle between, to me, those two matches were the best on the first show, you would say. You know, they're right around the same level. I mean, even on Cage Rush, they're like 0.1 score apart, 7.95 to 7.96. So, that shows you, like, that's a good start. You still would want, you know, nobody blew the roof off, but they were two good matches, quality ones, well worth watching. Taichi versus Ospreay was another fine match. They built pretty well to Taichi getting his big win, you know, there in Sapporo. I thought they did a pretty good job there. So, you know, that's three matches, even still on a downer kind of show that are worth watching, I would say. You know, that's something you have to really give them credit for. The second night I thought was a lot better, as I said earlier. I mean, that's totally different. Set the tone right away. Finlay and Ishii was an
excellent opener, yeah.
Yeah, like, great fire from both men. Just a perfect kind of match. And once again, Ishii looks like he's headed to be an MVP candidate for the tournament already.
Again.
par for the course for him. And Finlay showed a lot of great fire. I mean, this is a perfect style. They wrestled at New Japan Cup and had a great match as well. So I wasn't surprised by this. But I thought it was a good choice for the opener as well. I think they did better than the first night. And I think that set the tone better. Zach and Tanahashi, that might have been my favorite match.
Absolutely.
The first two nights.
Yeah, loved it.
And, like, once again, like, everyone is burying Tanahashi going into the tournament. And I was the one who said, I will not say that. I refuse to believe it until I see it with my own eyes.
I said it on the last show in the most underrated category. I gave the Hiroshi Tanahashi Award to Daisuke Sekimoto for also being apparently toast. Tanahashi being apparently toast here once again, showing up in a great match. Man, yeah, I love this match. This match, Zack Sabre Jr. versus Tanahashi. This was just so great to see these two basically playing chess with each other's limbs, right? Going to the leg locks, going to the cross arm breakers at the finish of the match, reversing themselves out of the cross arm breakers into the eventual pinfall. Zack Sabre doing this was kind of the theme of the show too. Guys doing other guys' moves here in this situation. It was Zack Sabre doing the Texas Cloverleaf on Tanahashi, and Tanahashi turned that into a triangle choke. In the main event, we saw Jeff Cobb using the Combinación Cabrón from Tetsuya Naito as well. But Zach, really great approach on Tanahashi. And from the get-go, it looked to me that Zack Sabre Jr. would be winning this match. I think the only chance that I saw for Tanahashi, by the way they built the match, was really to get a flash pin. And that is what Tanahashi has been doing lately. He's been using the small package more often to get wins. So this was the one out for Tanahashi. But Zack Sabre ultimately left him no chance, rolled him up in this situation where, on commentaries, they said he has to break the hold because Tanahashi was still holding onto his arm. But he rolled him up, got the three, and got out there. Yeah, great stuff.
Absolutely. And this night, I picked every match right except for the opener. I thought Ishii would get an upset over Finlay to start off. But I, once again, my pickems are really strong early on through the first two nights.
Yep, that's
here.
Great.
You know, like I said, very good stuff for booking how I thought they would, I guess you could say. But a lot of them made sense, like Cobb beating Naito, Zach beating Tanahashi. The thing with Zach, and I mentioned this when doing the Stardom shows on Patreon, when you pick these tournaments, when it comes to the champions, you have to book them not just for their own sake, but who will get a title shot coming after them. Tanahashi getting a TV title shot wouldn't make any sense. Like, there's no reason for him to go after the TV title. So there's no purpose in Zach losing, but there's going to be some people that beat him that maybe you wouldn't expect if you just look at Zach on his own. But they're going to build to future title shots. Same thing with Goto and Yoshihashi. That's a good reason why Yoshihashi beat Phantasmo. Phantasmo doesn't have a tag partner, so they're not going to build to a tag title shot afterwards. So this is always my advice when it comes to pick'ems. Keep in mind who the champions are, but keep in mind who the kind of people they will lose to isn't necessarily based on rank, but who will set up future title shots. And for Zach, Tanahashi getting a TV title shot probably wasn't going to happen. So, you know, Tanahashi doesn't need more on his plate than he already has at this point. But, yeah, like I said, I was very impressed with that one match. Maybe maybe the wheels have come off eventually, but once again, I think I was so impressed by Tanahashi. I loved working the armbar and how he did it. Just so smart, so well executed. I thought they had a heck of a match. And Zach, obviously, is going to be one of those dudes like throughout the tournament that is going to be a consistent guy with pretty much everybody. He's going to have a lot of great matches and be a guy that's a, kind of like a glue guy. The thing is, the D block is kind of full of that those type of dudes, like glue guys to the block. And you have to think that they're there to make somebody like a Naito look a little bit better, pretty much heading into what should be a big tournament for him.
Yes, absolutely. So on this show, the main event I thought was pretty good. Jeff Cobb versus Naito, not the best match of the show, though. Eddie Kingston versus Shingo Takagi also has a very high rating of 8.33 at this point that we're talking. Would say this is kind of a soul food kind of pro wrestling match, right? These two just going out and throwing big bombs at one another, chops, lariats, and all kind of that stuff was nice to like see this match unfold. It's not that I will remember this match in a few weeks or in a few months, but for what it was a great way for Eddie Kingston to open up this G1 Climax tournament, get a big win over a former world champion as well. So that sets him right up there with the top of the block, because you'd expect in block C that Shingo Takagi will be one of those that will be in contention at the final final block action day.
Yeah, I do agree with that. The Kingston and Shingo match was good. I really liked that, obviously. So cool to see Kingston living his dream in a lot of ways. I've always said that I personally think Kingston just... as a fan and analyzing his wrestling, I've always thought that he was better not doing the Japanese style. Like, I think that's not really his strength as a wrestler. He's much more of a street brawler type of guy, is really where he is one of the best. Doing the Japanese style exchanges, I actually don't like. I thought Shingo's strikes were a lot better than his, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. And I would like to see him kind of lead more into his strengths. But I mean, that's probably not going to happen. I mean, obviously, this is like his dream run, so he's going to do a lot of the Japanese style stuff, which I'm still 50-50 on if I like or not. But in the end, it worked out. Like you said, Shingo was your pick for the best wrestler, the in ring performer of the half year. So once again, he's proven it. I mean, I thought if you look at execution wise, he's just there's a few that are as good as him, and Kingston definitely got a good win here. Good match they had there. That's another good one. I mean, you look at the card. Finlay Ishii, Kingston Shingo, Zach Tanahashi. Like, those are three big matches that were basically as good or better than anything on night one.
Yeah.
Going in there. And the main event was better than the first night's main event, but the Cobb and Naito match, I agree with you, wasn't as good as those other big matches going in. But I did think that they were smart here with how they booked things. The Yano and Goto match, for example, they had Yano debut a new gimmick with this mascot character that he came out with, which was like, the thing is, Yano is so old hat at this point. He basically has very few defenders left. It used to be people tried to defend him, but at this point, it's so one note that nobody really is into him. But now he's got this new mascot to help make him seem a little bit more interesting.
Well... We'll see what other mascots in other regions he'll bring out there to the ring. I want to pick up that point as well, because that's one of your core points every year when you look at the bottom half of these blocks that we have or here in person with Toru Yano. Ultimately, this is a tournament that sets up the number one contender for the Tokyo Dome, for the world title match in the Tokyo Dome. And can you imagine like Toru Yano and his mascot going into the main event of the Tokyo Dome? Of course you can't. I mean, a lot of people think that Toru Yano is a nice change of tone for the G1 Climax and to get a little bit of fun in the tournament. But ultimately, like, nobody would seriously think that this guy is winning the tournament. And we got plenty of these guys in the tournament. When you, for example, going back to day one, look at the undercard of day one. I mean, the undercard of day one was so bad. This Chase Owens, Gabe Kidd brawl did nothing for me. The match ultimately was bad as well, because Gabe Kidd was like putting Chase Owens away all the time in this brawl. And then he lost in under 3 minutes, which made him, I think, made him look pretty bad. Tangaloa versus Kenta was atrocious.
That was an awful match.
It's hard for any G1 match this year to be worse than this.
Kenta may legitimately be one of the worst wrestlers walking the planet. Like I hate this. It pains me to say that. Like, I don't want to believe this. I don't want to live in this reality where Kenta stinks. But you know,
it's crazy. Like that some of these guys here on this show made the cut above someone like Filthy Tom Lawler, who was in the tournament last year, wasn't brought back this year, and we see Tangaloa gassing in 10 minutes here in this match. We saw Kenta being just dirt awful. Chase Owens is in this tournament, but no place for Filthy Tom.
I mean, I guess maybe they flew out enough. There was just one person they couldn't fly out. Like, that, they reached their limit for this tournament, fly from America here. But yeah, he would have been better than some of these other guys you just mentioned. I mean, like I said, Kenta in particular, like, there's nobody worse than him on the roster. And it's a terrible, terrible fate that one of the, like, the greatest wrestlers of our generation has been reduced to this. Like, and it's...
Yeah.
And it's ultimately, just sad.
Yeah, and ultimately, this also is a match that has two guys in it, in the tournament, that are looking, in storyline, to become the number one contender for the world title. I mean, Zanada versus Tangaloa as the main event of the Tokyo Dome, can you imagine?
Oh, that would be brilliant. I mean, the thing is, I'm not going to rip Loa too much because he was in there with Kenta. And
maybe he'll have better matches, yeah.
When was the last time he wrestled, even? It feels like he's been gone forever.
Yeah, he was out for a long time. Let's see. Last match he had was in May of last year.
Wow. And that's the thing is, his purpose, much like I said about the champions, but he also took the challengers, he is going to beat Yoshihashi in a future match and set up a tag match for the Guerrillas of Destiny. Like, that's basically his own old purpose. I mean, even his brother, you know, obviously, I mean, I thought the Evil match was obviously an Evil match.
It wasn't as bad as prior Evil matches. I mean, even during commentary, they brought up this atrocious... I'm using this word a lot in this show, but it was atrocious. This atrocious match in Currican Hall a couple of years ago between these two where Sho flipped the lights out.
That's one of the memorable, terrible Evil matches. For sure. They built a match around the Togo and Jado going at it. So,
in contrast to prior Evil performances, this wasn't as bad, I would say. It was a nothing match. It was pretty boring, to be quite honest, but not offensively bad.
Yeah, they could have accomplished this in like 5 minutes, and it went
almost.
So there's that. The key is to have Dick Togo wrestle, I think, instead of Evil, and maybe we'll get something good.
It's also a point that Amy made on Twitter yesterday. How are these matches so long? Like, why is this match 18 minutes long? Why is, like, for example, on day one, what did we have? Okada versus Great Okan went 15. Kenta Tangaloa went 12, almost 13 minutes. Taichi and Osprey, 18 minutes. Like, they implemented this new time limit draw, but that doesn't necessarily mean we have to go close the time limit in two-thirds of the matches.
We've seen that with the TV title a lot, when they had the 15-minute time limit draw. Yeah. That's been there. That apparently means something to them. But obviously, Dragon Gate has a tournament right now, this King of Gate tournament. Mm-hmm. And in that one, there's a 15-minute time limit. As well. The Stardom tournament also has a 15-minute time limit as well. So they kind of keep things in that format. And the G1, it's nice that they put the time limit in, I will say, or like they shortened it, because usually it's a 30-minute, and now they just shortened it to a 20.
And
but
yeah, while this is funny in some ways, it also brings up a great point of, for example, like, take Okada, right? Usually, in the first 10 to 12 minutes in an Okada match, nothing ever happens. And now we got this 20-minute time limit, and now Okada has to, like, start working within the first 10 minutes of the match to get all his stuff in and get the finish done by the point that the time limit runs out. So these wrestlers are used to a formula in some cases. For example, like mainly Okada in these main event situations that always go above 20, sometimes close to 40. Tetsuya Naito as well. He now has to do his match within the time limit of 20 because in other situations, his usual matches in the G1 are like 27 minutes long. And this brings up the question why these matches in other circumstances can't be like these. Why do we have to have a 36-minute main event? I've heard the argument that fans in Japan want a main event that goes long and feel ripped off if they don't get their long-ass main event. I get that. I can see that argument. But if you have like more matches that fill their time well, that to me is much more valuable than a match that is basically nothing for the first 10 to 12 minutes.
You know, it's interesting because for years, that wasn't really true. Like, a lot of the main events in New Japan were a lot shorter than their contemporaries from All Japan. Mm-hmm. If you go back and look at their title reigns back then, not to say there was never any long matches, but, like, it was commonplace to have matches, like, title matches that were 15 minutes mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So I do think that's an interesting thing to say. I don't know how true it is. But at this point, they've conditioned the fans for that as well. So you're talking about stuff that's over a decade long since right. Okada came in. So I guess that's possible now, I would say. But I still think you could – there's no reason you can't recondition them to something new and better.
Maybe this G1 is the starting point. Them lowering the time limit was a very interesting approach, I thought. Maybe also needed because they have more wrestlers in this tournament and have more matches. So they maybe thought we have to cut down on the match length to fit all these wrestlers in and to like keep the shows as short as they are usually, because these G1 shows almost saw this one on demand today. Not sure how long the first was. The VOD for the second day was almost 3 hours, like 3 hours and 8 minutes or something like that. And that's a good length for a show like this.
Yeah, I think the show length overall is at a good pace now. Like, all of the matches are well in. Even before this, remember Sonata's title match versus Tsuji. That was a 17-minute match as well. So it does seem like they're trying to make an effort to shorten things, at least. So I got to give them credit for it. I just think, ultimately, you see the matches. The two most interesting matches on the first night were Naruto and Umino and Tsuji and Kaito. Right. And those were the best ones. So the ones that really stuck hold, Ishii, everybody knows he's always great. Tanahashi always delivers in the G1. So like all of the main characters, like the best workers are showing up, and you have to hope that others will follow suit and like find a new gear coming in there. Shingo and Kingston, as we mentioned earlier as well. Somebody like Okada. I mean, that match with Okan was really like a nothing match to me in there, and it felt like Okada wasn't even interested really in having a good match. He just was going through the motions kind of and letting Okan do his grappling stuff, and then it was time. When it's time to go, don't worry about selling or anything like that. Let me just go to my stuff now.
I thought that the positioning of the Okada match was very interesting because I can't remember a G1 tournament where Okada was in the mid-card for the first show. He usually ends the shows with a big speech on the first night. So I thought this positioning was very smart in a lot of ways because it followed the Renarita versus Shota Umino match that you said was one of the best matches of the first two shows. And after that, we had Kaito Kiyomiya versus Yota Tsuji in another very good match. So what I took away from this is, yes, the match itself wasn't very good, and like Great Okan never looked like any threat to Okada. They could have accomplished more on that with Okan getting more of a shot of actually beating Okada. But I guess that wasn't the idea here. I think the idea of this was to sandwich Okada between the Reiwa Tokun Musketeers to allow them to look great in these two matches, while the guy that is believed to be the best wrestler in this tournament by a lot in Okada, he didn't necessarily stand out, but that made the other matches look better in the end.
It's also a vote of no confidence for Okan. Yeah. That's something I noticed. If you look at the tournament, he really doesn't have that many main events at all. Like him and Yoshihashi have the same number of main events.
Yeah, he's absolutely not a guy.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and that's somebody I really thought they would want to do something with. I'm not shedding tears because I'm not that big of a fan of his, actually, to be honest. But I did think, I mean, his background is so strong that, you know, you would have thought that he would be somebody like that. And, I mean, unfortunately, that's where he is right now. Like, guy who's never main eventing, guy who's, like, basically a sacrifice to have a mid-card match for Okada on the first show. And not a lot. And like I said, the match didn't impress anyone either, so it was all no good.
I don't know to back that up, Dylan. To your point of them probably of him being a guy in his early days in New Japan, they were completely behind this dude. I mean, he was an accomplished amateur wrestler. He was an accomplished sambo fighter as well, and he also did some MMA fights in the Ganryojima promotion before going onto his excursion. So this guy had a legitimate background, and this at this point in time when New Japan was searching for their next guy was something they were going for. And this guy, while he already was a little old when entering pro wrestling, this guy seemed like their project to make him work. But now he's just basically a dude on the card.
Yeah, and I think he's another one, a victim of the gimmicks that you would have here.
Yeah, the gimmicks. Yeah.
Like, this isn't a main event act. Like, a great Okan, there's no way around it, ultimately. And he's always felt like a step behind as a young lion, like some other people in his class, like in the ring. But still, I mean, this guy was going to Olympic tryouts wearing the New Japan logo on his singlet, like for amateur-style wrestling. So you would have figured they loved him. But, yeah, it just hasn't paid off yet. And like you said, ultimately, he's just a guy, you know, on the card. And I think that's how we should probably look at him going forward, unless there is a change of some sort. And he's already getting surpassed by the other guys that are coming
exactly.
up here.
Exactly, yeah. The winner of the Fashion Climax, by the way, Yuta Tsuji. Great suit he was wearing. Loved it. Yeah, Yota, let's look at the Yota and Kaito match first. What did you think of this?
It was really good. I think that Kaito, like, he needed a match to kind of establish him to the G1 crowd. I think it's good where, like, this was a very good opponent for him, I would say, where Tsuji has a great aura to him. He has a lot of, he's clearly taken a lot from Katsuhiko Nakajima, like, with his mannerism, his facial expressions and things like that. Like, he has that kind of similar vibe of, like, a guy that he's, like, playing with his food, almost. Like, you know, in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
He has that really on lock overall. And Kaito's, the best kind of opponent for him because he's a great underdog, babyface type of guy. And I thought that really worked out as well. And the storyline made sense. These two were trash-talking a lot heading into the tournament. Tsuji's clearly, of the three, like, musketeers, he's the one that they see the most in, like, clearly. Like, because if you look at the tournament, he's the one that they're giving all of this talking time to, all of this interview time. Like, they built this whole deal around him.
Yeah, he was at Noah shows, was sitting front row to confront Kaito Kiyomiya. They built this up. This is really unprecedented, I would say. Like, in no tournaments in the last couple of years, they've done something like that. That the eventual matches that happen on the first day or one of the eventual matches is built up through weeks and weeks of trash talking and even appearing at the other guy's promotion.
And not only that, just in general, I think the tournament itself, he's gotten so much spotlight. He's on the interviews on the website. He's talking about everything, trash talking everyone, you know, and they really gave him a lot of spotlight heading into the tournament overall. I will say that I didn't like it at first. And now, as time has gone along, especially with the Three Musketeers things, I really don't like that they're all three in the same block. I think that was a very poor decision. Like, I don't know why they did that overall.
Yeah, I mean, they could have spread them out through throughout three blocks, but then again, there would have been one block that didn't have a Three Musketeer guy in it. So maybe that's why they backed away from that idea and put them all together to establish the thought that they are clawing for the top position in this company.
We'll see what they do, and I think you could easily see them having more draws with Tsuji in the future, like the three of them all drawing with each other is a definite possibility.
It is.
I would say. And you put him in the block with the champion as well, and Tsuji's going to beat Sonata to get his win back.
I thought it was interesting that this match was built similarly to the match that Yota Tsuji had with Sonata, also with the same length of the match. It was Yota Tsuji being completely dominant above Kaito Kiyomiya. I mean, you said it, great underdog babyface in this situation, build him up for the G1 crowd. And in the end, Yota Tsuji didn't make it work for him. And that's ultimately the story that can be the story for him in the tournament, that he has to find a way to put his complete great explosiveness into points for him, and not only just look great at the beginning of the match, but also benefit from his strengths and win the match in the end. So I thought this approach of mirroring the Sonata match was very interesting, I thought.
Yeah, and I think it worked for him as well. It's just an easy, an easy kind of match to work for a guy who's a little bit physically bigger than his opponents here. And I think he did a great job here. I mean, that Sonata match was almost a showcase for him. And in this one, they turned it around to have Kaito get a little bit of shine as well. So I thought it was really good. And, Umino and Narita, I like that they're focusing on these guys, like the three here. I like they clearly put an effort into putting these guys in big positions and having focus and things like that. So I do like that overall, I would say. I think putting them against each other was interesting because, putting them against each other, their match was good, don't get me wrong. And Narita, I just think, is a really strong in-ring guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the match was missing a spark plug like Tsuji and Kaito had, where Kaito, the dynamics just worked really well together, where one was a face and the other was this charismatic, powerful guy. And I think that they missed that in that match. Like, there's a charisma spark missing between these two that Tsuji does have.
I thought that by the end of the match, like the final 2 to 3 minutes of the match, where it looked like that Shota Umino was putting Renarita away, and then Renarita in the final couple of seconds was able to get in the Manjigatame, I thought in that moment of the match, they really had that spark that was missing at the beginning of the match, because the beginning of the match felt really cold. But I think throughout the match, they worked so strong that the spark went over to the crowd, basically. And in the end, it was a very heated final minutes of this contest. So they were put in a tough position. I mean, they had to show up and they had to have a good match. They ultimately did, which is reflected by the rating that we have on Cage Match. And that is to their credit that they took this situation and basically they swam. They were able to put this into a good match. I can't imagine how big the pressure must have been with this complete unnecessary thing of announcing them as the Three Musketeers, creating a lot of pressure. But amidst this pressure, and I think that is part of the reason why New Japan ultimately thought that this was the way to go, under this pressure, these two, they survived.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the Three Musketeers deal either, to be honest with you. I'm just like you. I didn't think it was very necessary. I like the, like I said, there's good and bads to it, because by saying that, you put the spotlight on these three immediately, and that gives them something that everybody can kind of point to. Unfortunately, it's bad. And like you said, it was so unnatural and unnecessary.
Mm.
I think this would have worked better if they had, because my ultimate problem with this is that they've done nothing ultimately to this point. Like, none of the three has any accomplishments in New Japan. And like, they're really, I don't want to say nobodies because they are important guys, but they've done nothing at the end of the day. If they had built to a moment where I mean, it's like if Tsuji had won the title, like, you know, against Sonata, that would have been one thing. Or even if they had just waited until the end of the tournament and then had, let's say somebody advances from the block and then the other two come in and raise their hands and, like, they're all together. Yeah. Kind of a redo of the original Three Musketeers, which is, like, that's exactly basically what happened. Although he won the tournament, that one, and I don't think any of the three will win this, but, like, give them that moment to link to make a legendary deal. A lot of the defense I've seen from this is that, well, you know, Dylan and Striga, it's supposed to be bad, okay? It's supposed to be unnatural. That way they can complain about it. And that will make Tsuji look more like a rebel, like Naito. The problem is, yes, they did similar stuff with Naito and Okada, where, you know, because we had seen building up this up, where Umino said, oh, it's actually a good idea. And Tsuji was like, no, it's stupid. Like, why would you do this? They've done stuff like that with Okada and Naito before. But the problem is, Okada was a multi-time champion when that happened, and Naito was a main eventer in his own right as well, G1 winner. These guys have no accomplishments, and I think that's the problem. Why even draw that comparison to the Three Musketeers? I've yet to get a very good response to that, like a good answer.
Really not a good answer to that, because the argument, it is supposed to be bad so these three can complain about it. That is...
Or like, Tsuji can complain about it and Umino can defend it.
Umino can be
the company guy and Tsuji, like, kind of like the new Okada and Naito. Mm-hmm. They're trying to set them up to be. But the problem is...
That's very unnatural to begin with. Like, this is a forced storyline with something that comes from the company, from the top of the company.
And why... And my big issue is, why even bring that up to the fans? Like, because now the fans are going to bring that in and compare it. And I just don't think that's the right thing. You could have focused on these three. I'm all for that. And that's the good thing about it, is that it gives them a focus. Like, you know, at the end of the day, like, it shows that they're serious. It shows that they're meaningful guys, that they're not Okan, for example, like dudes. Like, they actually care about them enough to put this kind of spotlight on them. That's a good thing. But I think you could have done that. You could have easily have focused. They could have accomplished everything they want without mentioning the Three Musketeers' name. You know what I'm saying?
It's not necessary. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, have them have the draw. Put them over. It looks great. But the Three Musketeers part is what I have the issue with. You could have done everything you wanted to do without bringing that up. And, I mean, if the big plan is for them, for somebody to have a huge run and go to the finals or something like that, okay. But even then, I still think it would have been better to wait until that happened to make that declaration, more than just like, oh, we're going to do it. Ultimately, the purpose of it was to give them publicity heading into the G1 to make their runs more interesting than they are, which kind of signifies to me that they're not going to advance, but it's fine. Like, from that point, it worked. I mean, we're talking about it on this show at the end of the day.
Yes.
Would we be talking about these three? Obviously, they're from the same class and all. We'd be talking about it somewhat. But would we be talking about it to the extent that we have for weeks since they announced it? Well, it worked, ultimately. So I don't like it. And I still think they could have accomplished a lot without it. And it would have been better if they'd waited. But they got what they wanted out of it as well. So I think there's two sides to it.
That is a very healthy take on that, to be quite honest, yes. Let's look at the Taichi and Osprey match, because this match has the highest rating. You mentioned it. All the matches are very close. That are the top matches. 7.95 for Narita. Oh, I wanted to talk about Narita a bit. Forgot that.
we should always talk more about him.
Exactly. Let's look a little bit at Shota Umino and Rei Narita. I thought that Shota Umino, in his approach to the match, looked much more polished than he did in matches prior to that. He had a lot of rope-based offense that really looked very good. In one situation, he kind of botched a DDT a bit, where he came off the from the apron over the top and kind of got hung in the top rope. But other than that, I thought his offense looked very smooth in a lot of situations, which is interesting that he still is using the or goes to use the Death Rider as his finishing move, which got exposed here because Rene Ritter kicked out of it. So maybe he'll have to go and search for a different move that gives him victories in this tournament. So Shota, he has a good look. He wrestled well in this match, so he'll be fine in this tournament. Rene Ritter, Dylan, on the other side. Rene Ritter is a very good in-ring performer. But in contrast to the other guys, to Shota Umino and to Yota Tsuji, he clearly lacks the look. I think Rene Ritter should really invest some work into like getting his body a bit more in shape. I'm not shaming this guy for his body, but in comparison to Shota and to Tsuji, he clearly has the least of a star look, if you know what I mean. If you put these three together and you put Rene Ritter besides Umino and Tsuji, you can clearly see that the others have put more work in. So, like, in a lot of situations, he kind of looks like the little brother of what Katsuyori Shibata used to be in New Japan, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I've been saying that since he came back, pretty much. Yeah. Is that I really wish that he would get away from all of that and change to make... You don't have to completely change, because, I mean, everything you said, would you say the same about Shibata? Because it's basically the exact same. Like, you know, look, everything about him is the exact same.
Yes, but Shibata's look is more polished than Arita's look is.
How so?
He has his body, at first, he has a clear shape of his body in contrast to Narita's body. I think he could just easily change a bit if he put on some more muscles, for example.
Yeah, okay.
So that's what Shibata has going for him. I would also like look at the hair. That was
my first take when he came back. Yeah. That's go back to our show when he had the match versus Shibata at the Dome last year, and I said that exact thing. That's an easy thing for him to change,
right,
to make him stand out. Like, get some color in the hair, make it to where it's not all black, you know, black tights, black pants, because all of those criticisms could have been levied, because, yeah, Shibata is a little better than Narita, but on the other hand, compare Shibata to Tanahashi's look. And Nakamura at the time, his contemporaries, mm-hmm. and you could have made that same argument back then. So now you have to look at Narita in comparison, not to Tanahashi and Nakamura, but to Umino and Tsuji. And I agree with you completely, honestly. Like, I think what you're saying is totally true.
I wouldn't say that he like needs to go into the direction that Shota Umino and Yota Tsuji are, because that would come unnatural for him, I would say. But just like, get a more polished version of this look that he has.
Yeah, and exactly. I didn't think he needed to change everything, but I just wanted enough to give him something uniquely him and get away from the Shibata stuff. Like I said, maybe change the hair, put a stripe on your tights, add a little color to there. You don't have to go crazy or anything. Or even just go to a different look entirely. Go to the long pants and kind of do a little bit there. Artificially give yourself more visually interesting aspects to yourself.
Exactly.
You know, at the end of the day, like you said, he is never going to beat Tsuji. No matter how he does, how much muscle he puts on, he will never beat Tsuji in terms of look. Yeah, Tsuji's just much bigger than him at the end of the day. So you like in terms of body. So you have to be more visually interesting with your attire and how you carry yourself. That is how he can catch up. But I agree with you. I've always said that I think that he needs to get away from the Shibata stuff. And like you said, maybe putting on a little bit of muscle wouldn't hurt. At the same least, I mean, he's small for a heavyweight. For sure. And I think a lot of people, you know, when they were all young lions, a lot of people maybe thought he may be a junior heavyweight when he came in. I'm glad that he is a heavyweight guy, but clearly it's something that's held him back a little bit, I would say. So mm-hmm. that would be my thing. I agree with you ultimately. Like, everything you said is ultimately true, and that's where he'll fall behind the other two in terms of the look. I think the in-ring, he's the best of the three, but... I mean, Tsuji carries himself so well.
Yeah.
Like it's going to be tough, like, to get by him when he's getting all this interview time. He's getting in the LIJ bump. He's getting the Naito bump. You know, having Naito there is automatically going to make you more over, you know, pretty much being around him. And he's bigger. He carries himself better. He has more charisma. I mean, when he debuted right away, you could see that this guy has it. Like, he has what it takes to be a top star. You could see it as soon as he walked out at Dontaku, just the look he gave. He's got it in the face. He's got it in the body. That's something I think the other two could really learn something from. Just how they emote, I think they could do a lot better. Both of them, Narita and Umino now with this. Umino, to me, he's clearly the one that's the least good of the three, I would say, in general. You know, he's the one that everybody talked about that really didn't have what it takes. There, I like what they did, though. Again, to kind of give some positive spin to that Three Musketeers thing, I like how they've handled him specifically in it, in that he went on Twitter and defended this and, like, made these really long Twitter posts that everyone kind of latched onto. Like, right away. Like, after the first one, they're like, why did you write this 5-paragraph Twitter post over this? And then he kept doing it. And I thought that was really smart of him, actually, to, like, lean into it. And now to become part of his gimmick, like, practically, when Tsuji was talking about him, that was what they talked about. Kaito, in the Noah interview as well, mentioned that. So I like how they've handled him as more of, like, a squirrely heel, like, of the three. Not, like, full-blown, like, evil type of heel, but, like, just a squirrely type of guy that's not as cool as Tsuji at the point. But Narita, the thing is, they made Tsuji the cool one, and Umino the lame one, like, the company guy. But what is Narita? Like, he's neither. You know, like, they don't have any distinctive characteristics to him. And he's the one that needs that most. He's the one that needs something distinct. And I think his career prospects, like, unless there is a big change, like I said, I love his wrestling. And he'll always be a guy that I love watching. But for a star, like, star power, he's got a long way to go in comparison to the other two. And I think that's something that hopefully through this tournament, through wrestling all of these different styles and these different guys, he comes to realize that. Because I think, like, teaming with Suzuki now, which has kind of been how he's been booked before this, like, it's good in some ways, but again, it kind of plays into his flaws. Like, again, Suzuki, all black, you know, basic look, you know, things like that. Narita needs to add something different to make himself stand out.
Yeah, agreed with that. So then let's go to the match that I was going to go to earlier. The Taichi versus Will Ospreay match has, by a short margin, the highest rating of the first night, 7.99. To be honest, I had trouble getting into this match for the most part of it, which was due to the fact that Will Ospreay is still, like, selling the match from Forbidden Door to a degree, I think. And the idea that he has is that he's apparently, like, selling concussion syndromes. And I am not a big fan of that.
It wasn't even about the Forbidden Door match. They made a point after Taichi, he hit this kick and that suddenly threw him off. Like, they made this big point after the head. The problem is the kick was so weak that nobody could believe it was any kind of concussion. Like, it barely grazed him, and they were talking about it like it was this devastating thing, and he said it like this crazy kick that it hit, and it wasn't that good at all.
And how are you even, like, how are you selling concussion syndromes? In my opinion, it looked really awful what Ospreay did. Like,
well, yeah, I mean, yeah.
He's moving around and suddenly he's like, he stands there and just holding his head.
The problem with him is, this is what I always say, this is why I didn't like the Forbidden Door match nearly as much as the Dome match. Ospreay can be great until he has to act.
Yeah.
When he has to act, that's why his heel character to me is so flat. Like, I think he's just such a poor actor that anytime he tries to emote or do stuff like that, it's always cheesy. It's always been that way since he came in. And if he could just wrestle, he does good things. It's when you try to bring the psychological aspects and the emoting, he's really, really struggled with, and he continues to, and this match was another example of that.
Yeah, and that's what ultimately, like, led me to not enjoy this match as much as I could have enjoyed it, because going back to February, they had a very strong match without any of this acting. And here they thought this is necessary to implement this storyline, or Ospreay thought it was necessary. Who knows who is the originator of this idea? when they then, in the final 2 minutes, got to wrestle and just throw out all the storyline aspects of what they were going for earlier in the match, this was a banger for the last couple of minutes. But before that, the 14, 15 minutes before that, I really had a lot of trouble to like grasp this match. And part of that may also have been because the Kaito and Yoda Tsuji match went before that, and I was a big fan of that. So by the end of the show, I already noticed some fatigue of these eight singles matches on one card.
That's going to happen no matter what. I feel like, you know, I don't know. I'd like, again, to compare it to the Stardom tournament, I mean, the Stardom tournament is just a complete mess, like, with how they've laid it out. Like, there's people that wrestle, like, they're going to run into the exact same problem, even with just two blocks that New Japan ran in last year, where, like, for example, Natsuko Tora, her last match is on August 27th until the final day, which is a month after. Like, there's going to be a month straight without her having any matches. And someone like Tom Nakano goes 3 weeks without wrestling from the start to the next show. So people are all mixed up. With this format, it allows everyone to be consistent, which I think is the main thing, where A and B block will be on one night, and then C and D on the second night, and then back to A and B. Like, that's consistent. You get rest days. This is like a perfect format to me. Whether it's too long, the problem is, again, if every person was interesting and good, I think that would be easier to digest. But the problem is, you're going through the Kenta and Tangaloas, or the Chase Owens and the Game Kids, and so on and so forth. You have to deal with those two, stuff that nobody really cares about or wants to see, with all due respect to those performers. They want to see the main guys that you think will either A, have a chance to win, or B, will gain something from this tournament. Like, you know, hopefully Umino. Like, nobody thinks Narita and Umino are going to win the tournament, but they hope that they gain something from it. And that makes them interesting. Yeah. But they realistically could have cut out half of this field easily.
Yeah, and that was my point earlier. They are going for the world title. That's the point.
Yeah, exactly. And I wish that they would do that, to be honest. But they have a lot of guys. And I think, like I said, I think there's no way around it, though. Like, you know, ultimately, I think through this tournament, you're looking at 20 nights of G1 Climax.
Mm-hmm.
It's the people are going to get fatigued no matter what, I think. Like most fans, not everybody, but most fans, I think that'll happen no matter what they do, in my opinion.
Agreed, yes. Let's look at some more performers on night two, because I think there's some takeaways from that. For example, like Mikey Nichols and Aaron Henare. I think he's going just with Henare again now. I think they announced him like that. So we might have to change that on Cage Match. Mikey Nichols and Henare came into this match with the determination to create a banger on the undercard. And I think they did. The match was very good, in my opinion. They worked hard to accomplish what they were going for. There was accidental blood in the match. But then this finish with what was the move? It was kind of a... What was the... Oh, the Master Blast is the name. Everything about Mikey Nichols is so, like...
80s.
Yeah, an unoriginal, the Master Blaster. I mean, no. Him and Henare kind of were on the wrong... were on two different pages, I think, with the finish, because Henare landed flat on his back. Landed right on his head there. It looked really bad, and could easily lead to him like missing a couple of matches, because that really looked awful.
Well, don't worry. He won't be using that finisher in many more matches after this. So... The Master Blaster. It's kind of, there's a charm to that, in my opinion. There's a certain charm to have a move that cheesy, like a move named that cheesy. In contrast to the completely cool Streets of Rage name for Hinari finisher. So lots of 90s, or like early 90s, or late 80s references here. This was like, this overachieved, in my opinion. Like I said, they didn't just change his name. They basically changed everything about him. He's going back.
He has this new face tattoo as well.
Yeah, he's going back to what he was doing before, more or less.
Which is good.
Yeah, I agree. at the end of the day. Like, they're really playing onto his heritage at the end of the day. Like, obviously, his Islander heritage, which is very cool. Obviously, like, nothing wrong with that at all. You know, Aaron Hanare was kind of, like, basic, you know, at the end of the day. Like, just everything about him. So now they're going back to that before. And Nichols, I thought, really showed up here.
Yep.
I don't know what switch got flipped in this match. I think the key was he just said, look, yeah, I'm going to drop you on the head. And before that, we're just going to do some big headbutts here until I get busted open hard way, which is what happened here. So they just, the effort was here to make this better than what you might have thought it would have been. And a good start. I predicted that Nichols would win this match just because he needs to beat somebody in the tournament at the end of the day. And I think you might look at one or two more wins at most for these guys. But I thought they would want to get TMDK off to a good start here for the tournament. Because those are two guys that you look at immediately. You're thinking, oh, why are they here? why are they in this tournament at all? Never mind. Nothing against their skill set. But just they're so low card. At the end of the day.
You could bring up a similar point for the next match for Michael Nichols' tag team partner, for Shane Haste. He got the win over Alex Covlin. And to me, this was one of the most frustrating matches of the entire tournament. Because, like, Alex Covlin, he is now in this new Bullet Club War Dogs stable, which I don't understand why they still use the Bullet Club moniker when they could just create something new from scratch with these guys that doesn't have the shadow above them all of former Bullet Club iterations and have them just be the War Dogs. That would completely work out, and the Bullet Club thing is just unnecessary in my opinion.
No, they clearly see some kind of marketing advantage.
Yeah, obviously, yeah.
I mean, same thing with the other, like the AEW version, where it's like they didn't have to be called Bullet Club, but they see something, you know, also known as the Juice Robinson Redemption story currently going on in AEW.
Love that AEW, by the way. Could have never imagined.
Yeah, exactly. Like the breakout star of Collision wasn't CM Punk.
Yes.
It's Juice at the end of the day.
We all saw that coming.
Anyway, and nobody may have saw it coming, but we enjoy that it's happening. Yeah. At the end of the day, we're glad we're living in that
reality. Clearly, the marketing point is a core factor. But I mean, creating something new could also lead to new marketing ideas that you could implement. And I get that the Bullet Club shirts are probably still one of the highest selling merch articles, but it's just been there so long that I have trouble, like, even caring for anything that any Bullet Club team is doing.
And I think they're trying to go halfway with that, like with the War Dog stuff. Like, they're trying to both create something new and lean and like have the Bullet Club moniker on it pretty much. Like, because for a long time there wasn't any of that War Dog stuff. It was just Bullet Club for 10 years. So, like, they're trying to put a new spin on it while keeping the name. I don't hate it because they wrestle good, like, which is my big problem with them for so long. Like, Finlay coming in has really revitalized everyone, I think. And I mean, they were two of the all three of them actually were like the standout guys in the press conferences. Finlay, Kidd, and Coughlin all cut great promos, and like were there really settling themselves in to be dudes in the tournament, even though I don't think they will be outside of Finlay. But still, like, the promo was good, the aura is good, the gimmick is good. Like, it's everything about them is good as performers. So whatever they call them doesn't really bother me. Like, as long as they wrestle, if they wrestled the same as Jay White Bullet Club, then I would probably agree.
I'll give them that. Yes, at least this new iteration of the Bullet Club has a different approach to it, and they constantly make the point on commentary as well that David Finlay's vision is different, and that's at least good, yes. But what I was going to talk about here was that Alex Covlin basically had this match won, and then for whatever reason, he brought his title and a chair into the ring, and they had one of the worst ref bumps that I've seen in a long time, because the ref didn't even like got touched by the wrestlers. He just fell and just was out. And then Covlin got dropped on the chairs, and that was the finish, because it was so bad and so corny in this situation, because the match was clearly going into a direction that ultimately saw Alex Covlin as the winner. And to be honest, I think that made him look incredibly stupid and incredibly dumb in the end.
Yeah, it sucked at the end of the day. And the thing is, maybe this sort of thing, maybe it could have worked if you were facing an over baby face type of deal. And that is not Shane Haste at the end of the day right now in New Japan. Again, I'm a fan of his. I circled him as somebody that to look out for, like maybe an underrated guy that if he has something, he'd show it. But to the New Japan audiences, they're not baby faces in the first place, let alone over ones. So, like at the end of the day. So this sort of thing would never work. And it was just dumb. Like the way they did it was so stupid. And it was a really disappointing thing after Finley's great match versus Ishii earlier in the show to see them kind of resort to this dumb Americanized stuff, which I don't think is very good at the end of the day. You know, mm-hmm. That's not something I want to see. And Coughlin, he's got a ways to go. Like the promo was great, but you know, he never really grabbed me in Strong when I saw him or as a young lion. I mean, what he's doing now is still better than the robot gimmick.
Oh, the robot gimmick. My God.
Yeah, like, it's hard to get worse than that at the end of the day. But it's clear he still has a ways to go. In one of my predictions later on, I predicted Coughlin would get a win over Tanahashi. That would be like his big win to hang his hat on. But I do think he needs to wrestle better than we saw here at first. I mean, it's not a good sign when Mikey Nichols is outshining you at the end of the day on a show.
Yeah, that's correct. Yes, and so I don't have any more talking points on the tournament as I'm looking through it. So what's your overall impression of the first 2 days?
Pretty underwhelming for night one. Mm-hmm. And night two was better, but still feels kind of cold overall.
Doesn't feel like G1, to be honest.
Yeah, I think they're going to need some time to really get into the flow of things and build to the big matches. That's another thing. None of these matches were big matches, ultimately, mm-hmm. outside of maybe Kaito and Tsuji, like in the Three Musketeer stuff, which they artificially created. So they created two big-ish matches, and then the other ones were all, you know, either undercard battles or, you know, something like Tanahashi and Zack we've seen a ton of times at the end of the day. So, you know, when you look at big matches in the future, like obviously the next night you're going to have Naruto and Tsuji in a match.
Naruto and Tsuji, right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and that could easily be a draw as well. I thought Tsuji might win. No, as well, so either one could be good. But no big match. I mean, look at this card for the next night.
No, the next two nights, there is really no big match.
Yeah, there really isn't at all. And then, I mean, night five, there's no big match either. Like, I'm looking at it right now.
No.
I'm looking to see the first big match we could have. For, like, a fan, like, the fan's sake.
The biggest match on night five is the main event with Sanada and Tsuji in their rematch. But that's not, like, a traditional big G1 match.
That's not a big match. Sanada is not at that level to do that, unfortunately, as the champion, in my opinion. So, you know, to me, Night 6 has the first match I would circle as a fan, like Ishii and Shingo. Like, that's going to be obviously a great match. That's not a big match in terms of, like, status. You got Sanada and Kaito. You get the foreigner, or not foreigner, but the outsider going against the champion, which I think is a deal, at least. So you're looking at night 7 until we get a major match, more or less, like with real stakes to it.
So what you're saying is we're going to get in deep G1 waters early.
And hopefully, the thing is, like I said, once you get to night 13, 13, 14, 15, and 16 all are the final days of the block. Yeah. So you look at those shows, it's going to be 4 G1 matches apiece on those shows. So I think that's an interesting strategy. You kind of wear people down early to bring them up later. Like, is if you look at how this tournament's been booked in terms of like the matchmaking of it, you have these lame shows early, like to where it's a bunch of undercard geek stuff, and then you get to night 13, and that's usually a point where, you know, we're just looking for the end at that point. You know, we want the tournament to get to night 17. Now that's when things really kick into another gear, is a night 13, and I think that could pay off by the end. So I'm open-minded to this tournament. But right now, it feels cold for what it could be.
Yeah, I mean, there were some good matches, but it's nothing that has me recommending a match that everybody needs to go out of their way to see. There's been no kind of this level of match in this tournament so far. And we'll probably see some of these situations where a match is completely overachieving. We mentioned as overachievers Henare and Michael Nichols, but still, though, this match wasn't anything special. It was just that these two guys came in with very low expectations for this match, and it overachieved from that standpoint. But we really need like a signature big main event match for the G1 Climax to really get out of the gates.
I think you have to point to Night 9 for that, where it's Ospreay and Okada.
Yeah,
the main event. That's like the first really big match. Like Kaito and Sonata will be good, and it's interesting to see a Noah guy chase the champion and what the result will be of that. But the big match to the New Japan fans is on Night 9, I would say, exactly, with Ospreay and Okada. And then, you know, we'll have to see where it goes. But talk about some of your predictions for the tournament. Like, who do you think is going to win? You didn't say it. We're bringing this out of the German audience. We're going to the world. you got to tell us who you thought won.
My predictions is going to be the quarterfinals. In my pick'ems are Kaito Kiyomiya versus David Finlay, Katsuhiko Okada versus Zack Sabre Jr., Shingo Takagi versus Will Ospreay, and Tetsuya Naito versus Sanada, which then leads to the semifinals of Okada versus Kiyomiya and Ospreay versus Naito. And my final is Tetsuya Naito defeating Kaito Kiyomiya.
Okay, so who did Kaito face?
Kaito faced Finlay. Kaito wins block A, faces David Finlay, who is the second in block C. Okada is the winner of block B, goes against the second place of block D in Zack Sabre Jr. Shingo, block C winner against Ospreay, block B second. Naito wins block D, goes against Sanada, who is second in block A. And then Kiyomiya versus Okada, Ospreay versus Naito, and final Naito versus Kiyomiya, with Kiyomiya getting the win over Okada.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense going in there. But I think I guess we'll have to see how they do it. I mean, there's no guarantee, I guess, because I thought they would do it another way. Like, so you were saying Kaito wins A,
yes,
and Okada wins B.
Yes.
Okay, so yeah, that makes perfect sense then, the way you said it. Yeah, that could really work, honestly. I had the semifinals all be Sonata versus Naito and Okada versus Kaito, pretty much. Yes. I had Sonata making it instead of Ospreay. But your way works as well, to be honest. Because I think Sonata, that tells the tale of what they're doing with him. Because basically how I had it was, Sonata would face Shingo, Ospreay versus Naito, Finlay versus Okada, and Cobb versus Kaito.
Sure.
I had Cobb winning D block. So we basically got to the same place. I just had Sonata face Shingo in the first part, because I think that plays into his LIJ story. He's faced Hiromu, then Tsuji. He would beat Shingo and then lose to Naito. Like, he'd beat all the members except for the last one. Mm-hmm. In my booking. I'm not saying that that's going to happen, but that's just how I laid it out. And like I said at first, too, I think if you're looking at a dark horse, you know, Ospreay winning, I still wouldn't completely write that off.
I wouldn't write that off either. But I have some trouble imagining where that would lead with him for Wrestle Kingdom.
Oh, Mega would come back and win the title at October. And that would
that would be the solution of that, right? But I'm not very confident of that actually happening.
I just can't imagine Sonata going into the door.
Yeah, that's the thing.
That's the thing
of the second half of the year, how they will handle this situation with him as champion.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they're going to have to get the title off of him before the Dome, ultimately. And, I mean, with my version, you could easily do... It's possible with something like that, you could easily just have Naito, like, use his title shot early.
Yeah. Yeah. With my way, they could use Naito's win over Sanada. Yeah, it goes in the same direction that you have. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, if they wanted to do that and get to Naito versus Okada or whatever they want to do in the Dome. Although, like I said, there's interesting ways they could go either way. It's just Sonata as champion opens the door for something like that Omega situation, if they wanted to do it. I think that they desperately want that match to happen in Japan, the third one as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Which is the, I mean, that's a way to do it, by putting the title on the AEW guy as well, like if they needed to do it. I wouldn't want them to do that, though. Like, personally, I think it would be better. The thing is, what are our options realistically, like, for this tournament? Naito winning is not exciting for me as a fan.
No.
Like, at all. So I don't have any love for that. But you can tell a story at least with that. And as always, I don't think we can also write off Okada winning this either, even though it would mean he might have to defeat Kaito again at the end of the day. I don't think you could write it off in general. What do you think the end game for Kaito is at the end of this tournament? Obviously, the idea would be to beat Okada, but they can't just leave it there.
No. My thinking, in my pickems of the tournament, I had Kiyomiya defeating Sanada, which would then result in Kiyomiya getting a title shot maybe in October.
Kaito can't main event the Dome.
No.
So Sanada would main event the Dome in your booking.
In this situation, it's currently Sanada. This is why I said this is going to be interesting how they handle this.
Because they
might have to do a second title match to get the belt off Sanada.
Yeah, I just don't think Kaito will get beat Sanada. Like, there's no reason to put him in a title match, in my opinion. Why? He still needs. He's not ready to main event a major show like with New Japan, in my opinion. You have to hope that they get there with him.
Exactly. Depends on how he'll be handled throughout the tournament. I mean, if he beats Sanada, they could easily do the main event. Sanada versus Yota Tsuji was a pretty cold match going in without any real storyline, without any real build up to that.
Yeah, and it did terrible numbers as well when it came in.
That's correct.
And all, like, the purpose of that match, though, was not to do a good building. It was to build up Tsuji. What interest does New Japan have to build up Kaito?
I don't think they have any interest to do that, but that could be something that Noah wants to get in return for him being in the tournament.
Well, they've already admitted, though, that was New Japan doing them a favor. Like, the president of NOAH publicly said that if he had fans in NOAH, he wouldn't be in G1.
That is correct. But it doesn't rule out that NOAH, in return, demanded that Kiyomiya gets a title shot.
Yeah, but NOAH can't make demands because they're doing them a favor. Like, if anything, New Japan would need something back for this.
But maybe they're using that. They're using this guy to have him to have a title match in October with Sanada, because who else is there that would get a title match with Sanada in October?
I think that Naito should get it, like I said, ultimately, like if he wins. And
I don't think that they're doing that. I don't think that they're doing that, actually.
If it's not Naito, then, I mean, if they're going, they need someone who could win the title in October, though, like to main event. What about Okada?
Well, Okada could, but that would require him to, like, why would he get a title match right now? He doesn't have anything, like, going for him if he doesn't win this tournament.
It's possible. I mean, there's no rule. What if they may just do a storyline where Kaito doesn't advance, like, as well? Like, what
sure.
if they put Tsuji over him then? And then it's Okada versus Sanada in the semifinals.
Yeah, that could work out. I'll give you that, for example, like, if you do Naito, he could easily say that this briefcase thing sucks, and he's not waiting.
Correct.
Which is correct,
yeah.
and he's not waiting until the Tokyo Dome and gets this title match in October. That could be possible.
And the reality is they can do anything they want. I'm just asking questions right now to try and logically go through this, because I don't think, oh, they made demands and they'll get this. Like, that's not going to, like, that doesn't make sense, because they, like, once he said that publicly, that's basically saying that, oh, New Japan's doing us this favor by having him here in this big show. Ultimately, he shouldn't have said that publicly. It was so stupid. I can't believe he said it. But regardless, it happened. You know, we can't put the toothpaste back in the tube, so to speak, with him. And you, like you were saying, you hope that they handle him well to where he can get to that point.
Yeah.
My guess is, I think, like, look at this tournament again. Look at these shows we talked about. Nearly every match on one of the, like, most of these shows, actually, it's not just this show, but you can multiple tournament shows coming up. it's a Japanese talent versus a foreign talent. Like, a lot of that is going on in this tournament here, the way they've utilized the blocks. It wouldn't surprise me at all to lean in, to see them lean into that and have Osprey and Omega at the Dome, even if it's not for the title, which I still think that's a possibility. But it's also possible they just do it for the U.S. title at the Dome and have Bryan versus Okada to get his win back from Forbidden Door. And that'll be two major matches on the show, ultimately, to kind of lean into that Japanese versus foreigner.
So what you're saying, that the world title is getting overshadowed anyways?
If Sonata comes in as champion, then he's not the main event.
Right.
You know, ultimately, like, if they're going to have
the only situation would be if Okada comes in as champion, which would result in the title not being overshadowed by anything else.
Yes, I think it would be a great idea if that happened. Okada's been the best guy in New Japan this year anyway. Like, to me, as a fan, I think he's the one who deserves it.
He's been great. He's been great in the main events, yes.
Yeah, you're looking at deserving champions, like, that would go there. I just wonder what their plan is, because I think that they're going to be very motivated for this Dome show. If you remember this year, I mean, this is the first year in decades, literally, that the biggest show in Japan is not a New Japan show. It was like the biggest show in Japan was Muto's retirement show. It was not Wrestle Kingdom. And you know that burned people's biscuits in the company. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I know for a fact that they were worried about it happening, and then it happened. And I just know that they want to have a big Dome. And you're also going to have the point of, oh, this is the year all the restrictions are gone. Even though I've said before that I've always felt that was like excuse making more than anything legitimate. But you get it to hang your hat on now, to where you can say, now we can have our real, like, the real return to Wrestle Kingdom is this year. I think that they're going to portray this as like the biggest Wrestle Kingdom in a lot of years.
Yeah.
And Sonata doesn't fit that bill as a champion, in my opinion.
That's correct. That's not. Yeah, we'll see where they are going. I still wouldn't rule out that they could do the LIJ, the LIJ versus former LIJ match as a storyline for the Tokyo Dome. I still wouldn't rule that out.
Yeah, if you have to, like, you know, because that is a storyline, at least, that you could hang your hat on, like the LIJ, and the potential of Naito winning the title again, that's a draw in and of itself as well, I know, regardless of the champion. So if they just feel that strong enough, and you could put these foreigner matches on the undercard, you know, that's, like, let's say that is the top three. You know, Omega versus Osprey, Okada versus Bryan Danielson, and Sonata and Naito is your big three matches. If they're confident in Naito, like, being a draw on his own, and you have this great undercard, yeah, that seems a very reasonable possibility, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. That would then still mean that Sonata is still champion until January.
If, you know, like I said, it's not ideal, but for these purposes, I guess I can live with that, because ultimately it's going to build to Naito getting his. And Naito's winning this tournament. Like, everything they've set up, like, leads to him going for the Dome. Now his big story is, oh, yeah, I main evented the Dome before. Yeah, I won the title before, but Kenta messed up my speech at the end, and I need to do that.
Yeah.
I need to say these words to these fans and do this roll call at the Tokyo Dome. I need it. So they're already signifying that as the big thing here, pretty much. So I think that's what we just laid out is the most likely possibility, ultimately. And if they want to see, like, if they wanted Kaito to have a Dome match, or not Dome match, a title match in October, that would make some sense. It gives you an easy person to beat, pretty much. Like, you don't have to blow a big New Japan match on that show before the Dome.
No.
Yeah, so it makes sense. Like, everything you said before, like, pretty much makes sense to me.
Yeah. We'll see where they ultimately go with it, what ideas they still have, who's going to beat the champion. That's what we're going to see. In the remainder of the tournament, we are going to look at all the action, of course, here on the show with more podcasts that we do about the tournament. But for now, Dylan, let's take one look at Pro Wrestling NOAH at the end of the show. You mentioned the biggest show of the year was a show under the NOAH banner, even though it wasn't really a NOAH show.
But yeah.
NOAH took the shine away from New Japan in February with the biggest show of the year. And During the opening weekend of the G1 Climax, Noah once again took the shine away from New Japan Pro Wrestling, because the best match of the weekend didn't happen in the G1 Climax. It happened on the One Night Dream Show. And I'm, of course, talking about the match in the undercard with Anthony Green, Tadasuke, and Yohei going over Jimmy Yang, Stallion Rogers, and Super Crazy Dylan.
I mean, this is what we were all looking forward to. This kind of match only happens once in a lifetime. You know, there are certain matches that are like that.
That is actually a factual statement, I would say.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you look it up at this, up and down this card. I mean, these are all once in a lifetime matches.
Yeah.
And, like Dante Leon teaming with Rey Escorpión. You've got Lance Onawai, you know, facing off with Masakita Mia. You've got Hibiscus Me.
That is a once in a lifetime match as well. Yeah.
Apple Miyuki from the K-Dojo days. Yes. In a Noah ring, which would be unthinkable to me 15 years ago. And here we are. And Jimmy Yang's daughter, like, Red Wrestling on top of it.
What a show this was.
This show is Noah. Like, in a nutshell.
It really is.
Like, throw everything against the wall. Everything that you can think of. And this is what you get, and it ends with an amazing match. So,
and it ends, yes. This undercard was really a variety show of what Noah is. Like you mentioned, this is Noah. This is a lot of wrestlers on the undercard, a lot of multi-man matches, lots of different wrestlers, Japanese, American. There is Mexicans on this show. There's everything, masked wrestlers, luchadors.
Big guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And
Australians.
Australians, yes, sure. And of course, in the main event, you get Katsuhiko Nakajima versus Kento Miyahara, the match that has had the label of the One Night Dream, which is why the show was named that. It currently has a rating of 9.72, a well-deserving rating, in my opinion. It is one of the best matches of the year and will probably end up in a lot of people's top 10 at the end of the year for the year-end awards, I would say. And this match, it's so crazy that these two really didn't have to do a lot in this match, because this had the inbuilt storyline. This is something that you just can't create, that you can't fabricate a storyline that results in a match like this, where you know about these guys' history, where you can feel the heat. When these two faced off, you could really sense the heat between these two. And I'm not saying that we don't have to go to the length of discussing if these two hate each other or anything like that. But for this, Dylan, it's completely acceptable and satisfactory, you could say, that we just know that these guys are from the same dojo. And they had these interviews before the tournament. I posted them on our Eastern Narrate account on Twitter, where they were talking about their different views on wrestling, where Miyahara said that he got into wrestling because he was a big fan of Hulk Hogan and the American spectacle of wrestling. And you can see the part of the spectacle in Kento Miyahara's wrestling, whereas Katsuhiko Nakajima, he had a legitimate fighting background and implements that into his wrestling and is a very no-bullshit wrestler with his approach. And that was just enough for this match to deliver everything that anyone could have wanted from this match. And it's crazy that they just had to do a kick in the opening of the show, in the opening of the match, and the crowd went completely crazy, Dylan.
Yeah, absolutely. This dream match filled and fueled by real-life tensions, obviously, in the past, you know, has led to this for years. You know, this, like, years-long beef that they've had that led to Kento leaving Noah originally as a part of Diamond Ring at the time and going to All Japan in the first place. So you bring that back over a decade later for this dream match, something that's been talked about, has been teased throughout the year. Remember the Muto show that we mentioned? They were in the six-man tag opposite of that. And now they've built up with great interviews, great storytelling. You've got the lore between the two. Everything about this worked so well. And to top it all off, the crowd, I mean, we knew it right away. Like, as soon as they announced this match, they sold out Corkman, which is something that nobody does. To the point they had even to add seats in to get this over 1,500 at this point. Even New Japan can't do that. And Kento did it. And that was great for them. So to see this match in play, this felt special as soon as they were both in the ring at the same time.
Yep.
The crowd was just amazing. I have to give it up to the crowd here. You know, I was just watching this and looking at the timeline when it was happening. I got to shout out one of my friends, Suicide Dive One, on Twitter. They were there live. They went from Thailand to Japan just to watch this match there. So you see this happening, and you know how special it is right away. The thing is, this was a spectacular match. There's so many things you could say about it. It went great, and I just loved the finishing stretch.
Yeah,
I was shocked that Nakajima won, to be honest with you.
Me too. I would have thought that Miyahara would have gotten the win here.
Well, that goes to tell you that this is not the end of the line with this feud, nor would it ever have been.
They will do two more.
At least,
and they will do some build up matches, I think, as well. They could easily milk Patrick on Twitter made the point yesterday. You could easily do a great main event for All Japan, for an All Japan show, for example, with X's against Kento Miyahara and Yuma Aoyagi. That would once again blow the roof off Currican Hall, for example. Do that. There's a lot of ways you can approach this. With one match happening in All Japan, or maybe both matches happening in All Japan, we'll see about that. But Noah probably wants to get a cut in here as well with more of these matches. And the end was very clear. In the end, Nakajima put him away clean with a vertical spike, but they left the opening that Kento Miyahara didn't accept the handshake and shoved him away after the match, which then helped him to still stand tall in the end, even though he lost the match to Nakajima.
Yeah, this is the end of the line. That was made picture perfect at the end of all of this. The only thing I'll say about this that I would have changed, this is like a very minor nitpick ultimately, but this is still a match of the year level match.
Yeah. Before you go to that, to the point that you want would have changed, I just wanted to say that I also put that on Twitter, that they didn't have to do a lot, but everything they did was done with this special note of more intensity, and that goes back to my point that I said earlier, that you can't create something like this in a storyline. Everything was done with a special note of intensity that put it over the top in the end. And you could see it in either guy's face, the facial expressions when they were going for a forearm or for a kick or for a lariat. There was this special level of intensity that put it over the top and made it that special.
That's true. Like, all of that is very well said. And I think Kento is kind of a master at those moments. I mean, he had the Kento maniacs running wild in Corkman here. Kento Hogan here at it again. But the thing I was going to say that I wish that they had done different, in my opinion, yes, the crowd was amazing. Like, there's no questioning that. I would never criticize that. I think that they started a little bit too slow for this particular rivalry. I think because of the heated nature of it and the real life hatred, and that's obviously done now, but it still happened. Like, everybody knows that it was real at one point, and you want to make people think that it's still real now, which they did at the Dome. As soon as they got into the ring at the Dome match, it was electric. And I think here, I would have liked to have seen Nakajima fire off guns blazing right away, and then kind of slow it down to the kind of drawn out play with the crowd stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that for this feud, it should have started as an attack right away. Like, you know, just because of the personal nature of it. But obviously, they still worked it beautifully at the end of the day. And that's just a minor thing I would have changed. Like, it would have been like my number one match of the year if they had started like that and really got across that hatred right away. Because, you know, it's hard to really say, yeah, they hate each other when we're like looking at the crowd for a while and trying to draw things out so much and be in the moment and all of that stuff. I think they needed that extra little bit of heat at the start, and that would have been perfect.
Yep.
And they still have more. There's tons of stuff that they really didn't even get into anything with, like, Kensuke, like, you know, that much.
That is true. They had Masa Kitamiya on commentary, and
their former dojo mate in Kensuke office.
And Kensuke Sasaki not being in any conversation before the match doesn't make me really confident that he will be there for the remainder of this feud.
Well, he doesn't even have to be there, but they didn't play into any of his moves. Like, you know, he won with the vertical spike. Like, we still could use the diamond
and
bomb.
The one they played into was Masa Saito with the prison lock.
Yeah, like they, like I said, they haven't even touched on the Kensuke stuff yet, which I do think will come eventually. Yeah. Like in some of their matches.
I was thinking that you were talking about the guy being actually there in person.
Well, maybe, but I mean, I don't know for sure. Like you said, he hasn't really been brought up in the interviews or anything like that. So if they were smart, they would do that. To be honest, and like I said, if this goes, because talking about the N1. This is something I brought up when they announced the blocks. Dean was on the show, and me and him were talking about it. And I brought up, because everyone kind of predicted either Go or Kenno would win the tournament. And I said a dark horse pick was Nakajima. If they see, because this was such an overwhelming reaction to this match, where they sold out Corcoran Hall. If they see that, who's to say they don't say, okay, we need to change plans to capitalize on this, like while we still can. If let's say Nakajima, and that's a situation where the NOAH title, or like the N1 winner, it's not established that they get it at the January 1st show, their big Budokan show. It's established that they get it before that. So if Nakajima wins this tournament and wins the title, that's a main event level match for Budokan. And that was another point I wanted to make. In my opinion, this match is bigger than Corcoran Hall. I think they made a mistake going through this.
That was my impression as well. They could have sold a lot more tickets.
Yeah, exactly. So I think if they're smart, and you look at Yoyogi for All Japan, which is where an ideal, like, second
match could
be, it's just interesting with them, because it's like, would you sacrifice Aoyagi, like, because he's the Triple Crown champion as well? What would be more important for that, a Triple Crown match or the tag match with Axis versus Kento and Yuma? You know, like, you have to make that decision at the end of the day. You could easily also have Kento just team with someone else as well if they wanted. If they wanted to do something.
If they need an easy losing post, that could be like, could be teaming with Rising Hayato, for example.
What about Masa?
Yeah, Masa.
Have him jump side, say, I was on Kento's side all along. Like Nakajima was a dick.
Good idea, yeah.
Yeah, like that could be something, a big time match if they wanted. If they wanted, and they may just want to do Kento and Yuma, but just something to think about, because that is a major show. I think their matches should be at big shows. You know, like not that was a mistake they made to make this a Korakuen venue, and I don't think it'll be repeated. But to me, like I said, I think let's look at it, because we went through the G1 and the Wrestle Kingdom card. Let's imagine a January 1st NOAH show. Katsuhiko Nakajima versus Kento Miyahara and Kaito Kiyomiya versus Okada for the third match.
Yeah, absolutely. But who's in the world title match then?
Nakajima and Kento.
Nakajima and Kento for the GHC title. Okay.
Yeah. I'm saying Nakajima wins the N1 the title, and then Kento challenges for him.
Yep.
Kento would have to win in All Japan to set this up as well.
Right, and that would then legitimately be a great draw for Budokan.
Exactly. I think Kento can do big business in NOAH. And I think, again, if I'm running NOAH, you're doing whatever it takes to get Kento on that show. Like, no matter what, he's proven to be a legitimate draw already. And you need guys. Like, you need people to do big things. And who's to say, like, if they can't work it out, who's to say Kento can't win the title and have a run as GHC champion? New horizons, new opponents for him? That's one of his biggest flaws in All Japan. It's nothing against him. It's that he's wrestled all of these guys so many times that he's a little bit old hat. So put him in a new situation. And NOAH, you could build to big matches. Let's say Kento versus Kaito down the line. That could be a drawing match for NOAH. Kento versus Sugira could have a match. Kento versus Hideki Suzuki at some point.
Ultimately, ultimately what it comes down to is that these companies working together creates great synergy for both sides.
And especially these two. Like, yeah. Like Noah and All Japan, it's extra special when they do it, in my opinion. So I think that's something you could look out for. Again, and maybe Go will just win and they'll do Nakajima and Kento as a non-title match somewhere down the line.
I was thinking that because with that, you could advertise another big match, like for the world title. For example, Go and Jake Lee.
I kind of feel the same about Jake as I do about Sonata.
That's correct, Dylan. But if you go into Budokan with these two matches with Kaito and Okada and Kento and Nakajima, the automatic thing that would happen is that the world title match gets overshadowed.
But why do we want that?
We don't want that, but that would be another big match they can put on. They can go into this situation and say, okay, we got a triple main event. You got another match you can just advertise.
I just think that that's bad, though. Like, I don't think that's a good thing or a draw at all. I think it devalues the title, like, to do stuff like that.
We've seen that has been done in years prior.
But
with the GHC title not being in the main event picture.
To no good effect, though.
No. I'm not saying that this makes sense, but I'm saying that this has been done in this.
And I'm saying, why wouldn't they have learned from these things?
You know? Well, it's wrestling.
Well, that is a great point. Like, to be honest, like, that is absolutely true. I want to believe someone's paying attention to running these shows in Noah and New Japan. Like I said, because we keep bringing that up. Yeah, you could have a weak title match if you have these strong undercard, but why don't we want the title to be the biggest deal? Like, isn't that what the point of the title in the first place is to be the biggest deal?
It is.
And we've seen in the past that it's failed pretty much every time that it's made the title look worse when that's happened. So I mean, look at the AEW title right now, even in America. That title is never the main focus of any of their storylines or feuds.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, you know, it's true in every company. Wrestling is still wrestling, no matter which company it is. So and like I said, I'm not saying you're wrong by saying that. I'm saying they're wrong if they think like that overall. So, like, and the thing is, I like Jake as a champion, like, well enough. Like, his in-ring stuff, I think he's grown. You know, I mean, I thought the match with Segura last month was, like, really strong, actually.
Yeah.
And he's a fine wrestler. I just don't see him as a he's not on the same level of Okada and Kaito and Nakajima and Kento. Like, no matter, like, that match you said, Jake and Go, is not on the level of the other two, clearly. And I think that's going to be a tough sell. And like I said, I'm not saying it won't happen. I'm just saying if it does, I would rather do what I said and just have Nakajima and Kento for the title. I think if I gave it one or the other, and maybe it'll all work out in the end anyway. Maybe they won't even. Maybe this will all fall apart after the All Japan show. Kento will get his win back, and that'll be it. You know, like, they just do one more match, Kento and Nakajima, and then maybe they'll do a tag match at the Budokan show or something of some sort. I mean, we don't know, like, because we're dealing with interpromotional politics.
Yeah,
and we've seen
everything could easily fall apart with someone, like, making a funny comment on Twitter or something like that.
Exactly. Like, what if, you know, I mean, look at what happened with the Cyber Fight Fest when you had that accidental knockout to Endo, and that. We don't have Cyber Fight Fest anymore.
No.
who's to say something, an accident wouldn't happen, or like you said, somebody cut a little too close, like on the promo or something, and that turns everybody off from working together again. Like, that could easily happen. So we have to be mindful and maybe not get our hopes up so high right away as well. I think that's worthwhile. But I do think that the N1, it's more interesting now. I think you could definitely believe Nakajima winning much more, which I foresaw this happening in the first place. I just thought that Kento would win to set things up, but they clearly want to have more with Kento and Noah, which is why Nakajima won, because I'm sure they promised that Kento will get that win back very soon.
Yeah,
what a great match. My main point, though. Amazing match of the year level. If you said it was your number one, I wouldn't argue with you at all. I thought it was, like, among the best matches of any promotion in the world this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, great stuff there from Pro Wrestling Noah, overshadowing the opening of the G1 Climax. Good for them, definitely. Yes, so Dylan, that's all that I have for this show today. We'll be back probably at the end of the week with more of our G1 coverage. And yeah, for now, I would just say thank you all for listening and goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLWRadio.com network.